This is the OTP, presented by Farm Bureau Health Plans. Plan on paying less for the coverage you need with Farm Bureau Health Plans. Get a quote today at FBHP.com. I'm Mike Keith. So glad to have you with us on this holiday, and so glad to share a really great conversation with Titans great Blaine Bishop. We had an opportunity to do a Follow Me Through Tennessee episode where Blaine and I drove to Gallatin and visited Swaney Swift's on the square. Now, if you haven't been there, you need to go. The burgers are fantastic. The desserts are outstanding. I recommend the Cookie Monster, maybe even for dinner alone. Just have the Cookie Monster. Anyway, we had a chance to talk in my Nissan truck on the way to Gallatin. Great conversation with number 23 himself. And so here is our OTP with Blaine Bishop. All right. Let's talk Blaine Bishop. Let's talk football. Here's what I found most interesting about your career several years ago that I didn't know. So I'm at a University of North Carolina football game, and I meet two of your teammates from Ball State. I don't, unfortunately, I can't remember their names. But they told me, they said, you know, Blaine did not start his career at Ball State.
No, I did not.
So you come out of Cathedral High School in Indianapolis. Where was it you started your college career?
Well, actually, that school is closed now.
Okay.
I went to a Catholic high school, naturally, as you mentioned, Cathedral. And me and a couple other guys, since we felt like we weren't getting recruited, we're all good students. I was naturally captain of the team. And so we decided to go to St. Joseph's College in Rensselaer, Indiana.
Rensselaer. Now, I know Rensselaer.
Yeah.
Because that is three exits down from where my wife is from. She's from Crown Point.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, Crown Point always had a great women's basketball program.
Still do.
Uh-huh. And to be honest, I hadn't even heard of Rensselaer until we started doing research, because I was getting recruited by a lot of Division II, Division III. Walking on it, you know.
DePaul.
DePaul. Yeah, DePaul. I mean, I had all these kind of offers like that, yes. Local schools there. Butler was one of the final ones that I was considering. And I went to St. Joe's. I went there, and it all kind of worked out, because, you know, that really hurt that I wasn't a Division I player. I thought I was capable, and not a high profile. My dream was to go to Notre Dame. You go to Cathedral Fighting Irish, you want to go to Notre Dame. A lot of students went there, maybe not players. They told me I was too small, I could walk on and those things. So I went to St. Joseph's, and I was excited about the opportunity. I thought I'd have a great opportunity to play right away. And so that was appealing to me. And it was an up-and-coming, you know, Division II school that no one really knew and, you know, wanted to go there really as far as football. But they had some good players. So, I decided to go to St. Joseph's College in Rensselaer, Indiana.
It's cold. And,
yeah. Oh, it was freezing. You get a touch of, you know, Chicago, a little bit of weather there as well. So it's kind of interesting. Some of the guys, I just talked to him about a month ago. He's the Coach Bates. Coach Bates was the defensive coordinator there at St. Joseph's College. Guess where he's at now as a defensive coordinator? He's been there for a while, too.
No idea.
University of Pittsburgh.
No kidding.
Yes. He was my DC.
Huh. So he coaches for Pat Narduzzi?
Yeah.
Pat Narduzzi there.
Narduzzi. Yep. I met him down. They were in Georgia, so I drove down and met him down there one time during a camp time years ago. But, so we've talked over the years. And, one of his early career stops, which is kind of fascinating, isn't it?
So what did you play at St. Joseph's? Were you a running back still?
Well, when I went there, I made All-State, All-City, All-Metro at defensive back. So, and we had a three-headed monster. You know, we're playing, power IT running back. So we all kind of blocked. You know, sometimes I was the tailback, sometimes I was the fullback, sometimes, you know, or I was the motion guy. I was kind of the home run hit guy more so than the other guys. So I could go for five carries for 105 yards and never touch the ball again. Right, so very true team-oriented type offense. And then I played defensive back, corner. That's kind of how I grew. And then I don't think I had enough carries really to be in the conversation of being one of the elite running backs, but my average yards per carry was really high. And I, in my heart and soul, I thought I was a running back.
No doubt.
No, you know, that was that era, right? So, but I, one thing I didn't ever, you know, kind of dispute, in which I, you know, I always try to convey to on air or, you know, to kids, is that, you know, opportunities is to play on both sides of the ball, and you never know where you may get that.
Right.
And even though my heart and soul was in a running back, I was never thinking I, that's all I was going to do. So I played defensive back when I first got there. That was the intent when I got there, and I started there, and they kind of had me at safety because they had another, they had a couple other guys that were pro prospects at corner. I think a guy from Florida named Toombs and another kid, I can't remember his name, but, and so I was there at safety, and I was being very productive. I was getting interceptions, blitzing. It was kind of came like my forte of doing multiple things, and I had cover skills because of playing corner. And I had a great, you know, I was a football guy. I was an instinctive player. So there came a time when it was week four, and the two starting running backs were injured. So going into the game, they only had two running backs left on the roster. So they said, hey, Blaine, we're going to have you teach you a couple plays. You may get in the game, maybe not. Hopefully it won't. Well, the first play, the starter got ankle sprain, and then the second string guy, I think, wasn't as effective. So they just put me out there a couple plays while I was still starting on defense. And then I ended up having a really good game. I scored two touchdowns as a running back, intercepted a pass for a touchdown, and then I think I returned a punt for a touchdown.
Wow.
And so after that, you know, I didn't think nothing of it. So after that game, and I can't even remember, I think we were playing like Kentucky State or someone. I can't even remember who we were playing. But after the game, I'm coming out of the locker room, and these two NFL scouts were there. Yeah, two NFL scouts, the Jets and the Giants. And they said, you got a shot at the National Football League. And I looked at them and thought they were, and I didn't even, I thought somebody was messing around. They said, no, and they had on their, you know, their golf shirts, you know, saying, you know, Jets and Giants. Mm-hmm. And they said they were there to watch some other guy on the other team, or, you know, or our prospects. And I was kind of still kind of stunned and like, oh, okay.
Watch out. Vehicle on shoulder ahead.
So I thought that was pretty cool. Yeah, so yeah, so at that point in time, I never thought about it again until the season was over.
So how do you get from there to Ball State?
Well, that's exactly what happened. So I went back to my high school coach, who was the president of the school, Coach McGinley, and asked him, sitting there, literally 6 months after, you know, I wasn't recruited really. I think I had Southern Illinois and Butler. That was kind of the bigger schools at the time that I could have chose. I asked him, was I a Division I football player now? He said, absolutely. And, you know, I wanted to say what changed, but I didn't really change. And actually, it probably was great because I was working hard. And, you know, when you're in high school, you're working hard, but then you ratchet it up to a whole nother level, right. And you become obsessed with just working out and kind of proving. I think that's where the hitman really started coming to life, really, because it hurt me so bad, because I would see other players, and I really understood how good I was and how good I wasn't. You know, I if somebody was better than me, and you know, I was like, yeah, that guy, he's really good, and I don't know, we're about the same, you know. And I got a confidence. Also, there was a kid we played against in high school, and he was a year behind us, but he went to Notre Dame on full scholarship, and I said, dang, I'm just as good as him. I'm we're the same size. So came back to him, you know, my coach there, Mr. McGinley, and so he said, you can go to Indiana State, you know, program's not that good, you know, and he said, Ball State does good program, you know, you'll be fine there, you can start right away, or you can go to IU, and you'll probably have to sit a year, and the rules are different there, so I was going to have to sit, but I was going to get to play after a year. I could practice, so they could use it as a red shirt, but that was the rules then. And so he called Ball State. I said, we'll call Ball State, and because since he said I could start right away, so he called Ball State. The recruiting coordinator was Coach Land, and he called him and he said, yeah, sure, we'd love to have him come on up, because they had looked at me in the year I came out of high school, but they had already offered two kids, and they actually ended up starting as true freshmen while I was at St. Joe. They went to Mayo and Trinity in Kentucky,
yeah,
and which were powerhouse schools, so you know, yeah, and so they had no more allotment because that's why they didn't offer me. So they said, we'd love to have him walk on, and if he does what we think he can after semester, we'll see where we're at. And so that was huge for me, because that's when I got a huge backing from my family. Went to all my games. It was just kind of like a family deal. And, you know, my mom said she'd give me a year, and we'd see where we're at, you know, paying for school. So,
how long before you get a scholarship?
Exit right two, exit 95.
So after practicing in the rules, then I couldn't play, but I just practiced every day. And they had me in multitude of positions. I was like the scout team guru, where I would, if there was an option quarterback, then I was the option quarterback. I might have been the receiver or the running back or defensive back. So I would do all those things in practice. So after the first semester, they offered me a full scholarship.
Wow.
You know, so that was pretty
unique. What was that like?
That was pretty cool, because I sat there with Coach Mentor. He was our DC, who kind of became, you know, bigger guy. You know, he left my senior year and went to Notre Dame DC.
Rick Mentor. Yeah.
Yes, and I think he was an interim head coach at Kentucky. He's been the head coach of Cincinnati.
Yeah.
His son now was head coach at Vandy. Now he's at Michigan. And when his son was here at Vandy a couple years ago, we used to meet for coffee there at Starbucks all the time. So, I'd keep in touch with all the guys who coached me and gave me an opportunity. But he was... part of this was him giving me confidence as well. So eventually I end up starting, and Mentor was the one who told me that, hey, you're going to compete to start at corner. And he said, what side of the ball do you want to play? I said, man, my heart is always going to be in offense. He says, well, I'm going to tell you right now, you are the third or fourth string running back on this team. And mind you, we had Bernie Pomaly.
Mm-hmm. Played for Miami.
The Dolphins. And Corey Kroon, who was drafted in the fourth round by the Patriots.
Yeah.
You know, towards ACL, never really panned out. And so, and then there was another kid there, and he said, you know, you're probably not going to be playing that unless you're going to be like third down specialist guy or something. So I said, I can compete to start on a cornerback? He said, absolutely, you can compete to start. And I looked at Coach Mentor, and this is when he looked at me, and I said, this, remember now, I'm going on 19. And I felt like I had nothing to lose. I said, so who am I competing with? Like, there is no competition. Because I had seen the guys, even though they started, and they were good players and good people. Keith Hackett, who is now a pastor, he's in Louisville now. He moved to Indianapolis. And Porter was the other guy's name. And Rick Mentor said to me, he put his arm around me, said, don't worry about that. You just go be you and we'll be fine. And so there was never really any competition. They moved guys around, and actually it was really kind of Keith Hackett, who was the guy who I roomed with on the road, traveled, really great human being. His dad actually is in the Hall of Fame, and his dad is pitch. He never told me this until literally like 5 years ago. His dad is one of the people that's the statue in front of Kentucky football.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, it's whatever the Hackett guy is. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I never knew that the whole entire time. So this guy has a, you know, a history of success in athleticism in his family. And so, yeah, that's kind of how it ballooned and started in making All-Mac and everything else. The head coach there, Paul Schudel, was a Michigan disciple from Bo Schembechler. So kind of was a run the ball. You know, we started throwing the ball a lot there towards my junior, senior year. And we're defensive board, and we had some, you know, really good players. But
so you started at corner for 3 years?
Yes, I was at corner.
So you didn't play safety at all?
I never. Well, in high school, my senior year, halfway through, the safety got injured, and they moved me to safety because the other guy, he was a real good player, but he just couldn't, you know, he wasn't better than the other corner, but he was a really good player. So then they moved me to safety halfway through my senior year, and Collins was his name, was play corner. So that was really the only time I really played safety. Now, I was a hybrid at St. Joe's, so I could say I did that there. But so it wasn't like it was uncomfortable, but I really had no, you know, in high school, you're just running around and chasing the ball.
Sure.
I'm not, you know, I wasn't reading keys or anything like that. But I was really a cornerback. That was my background.
So when... how many of the All-Star games did you play, and how much of did you go to Combine? How much of that did you do pre-draft?
Well, it was kind of interesting because I didn't even know I was getting scouted like that until my senior year.
Okay.
And they said 15 teams were here to watch you play in this game. And I was like, oh, man, dang, why didn't you tell me? You know, they were like, well, I don't think you would have played any different. And I was what they call the boundary corner. And at that time, most boundary corners end up being safeties in the pros.
Right.
Because you kind of blitz or run support. But, you know, and what we did there, I blitzed Rick Minner's defense, which was really complex. And probably that's probably helped me when I got into 46 is learning all these defensive schemes. Because we had to wear cards on our wrist, everybody. And all I did was play press man-to-man. I could play off, but I would never wanted to do that. So that's kind of where I was a cornerback. So I didn't know I was going to get invited. So all my invites came after the season where I was at the Blue Gray, the Senior Bowl, and then the Combine. That all kind of happened right behind each other. It wasn't like going into my senior year, I knew I was going to do it, or right when the season was going on, or right when it ended. It didn't kind of balloon into that until right after the season was over.
More of our conversation with Blaine Bishop coming up on the OTP, but I need to remind you that SeatGeek is the official ticketing partner of the Tennessee Titans. Whether you're buying or selling tickets to Titans games or any other live event in Nashville, SeatGeek is the place to do it. SeatGeek, the new official ticketing partner of the Tennessee Titans, so Titans fans can fan. Now more of the OTP with Blaine Bishop.
So did you know that you were going to be a safety in the pros?
No.
Okay.
No, I did not.
When did you find out that's what the expectation was for your career going forward? Or when was that determined?
Well, when I got there, I was still a cornerback, and it was more I was going to be a nickel. And I thought I was doing really – I was doing really good because I had great lateral quickness in it. You could see from, you know, my basketball days. So, and then I was strong for a guy my size. And so I was playing nickel dime immediately there with – the Houston Oilers, and they had three safeties get injured, which was Mark Robb tore his ACL, the first rounder 2 years before that, Mike Dumas from IU, which I was a little familiar with, tore his Achilles, and then the backup, I forgot who the backup was, he had a torn patella tendon.
Ugh.
And so eventually it got to, and that all happened in training camp, my rookie year. So I still hadn't done safety. So they come to me in a meeting during training camp and go, hey, well, you know, you're pretty sharp, you know, but we're going to probably move you to the safety in this defense, and we're trying to see if, you know, if that's something that you'd be interested in. And there's a huge part of me, I wanted to say no. but it was like, oh. And so, you know, it's one of those kind of shocking, oh, really? Dang. Okay. And so I didn't even know what was at store here when I, in the 46, because I didn't practice it or anything until, you know, halfway through training camp. And so then I'm playing safety. And one day I'm in 9-on-7 with all the hogs and Buddy Ryan pushing me from behind in there and telling me to get up in there, and my mindset is a corner. I may have been an aggressive corner, but that's nothing like playing safety.
Right.
And then playing half the time, you're a linebacker, you know, and then you're a slot cover corner, to then you're a big deep safety. So, yeah, it took me the all of training camp to come to realization this is what I'm going to be, and that really, really then brought the hitman out. That did it. That it, because I couldn't have played and practice every day without having it. I mean, that I went 100 miles an hour every single day.
You had no choice.
Yeah, I had no choice. I really didn't. And so I had to learn how to practice that way too, because I didn't know how to practice without going 100%. Because, you know, Coach Fish, you know, with
sure,
was like, hey, you're gonna slow down. You're gonna not only hurt yourself, but you can hurt your teammates. So I had to figure that out too. But that was after the fact, like after Buddy Ryan left.
What was your year like with Buddy Ryan as the defensive coordinator?
That was being a rookie. That was intimidating, and it was scary. There's no question. He called everybody by their number, so there was no, you know, hey 58. And then, you know, I got to play with Wilbur Marshall. He brought Wilbur Marshall from the 46. I remember watching Wilbur Marshall in grade school
with
the Bears, because Indianapolis we didn't have the Colts, so we had all Bears games.
Sure.
So I was real familiar with him, and then all the guys. We had Sean Jones, William Fuller. We had what we called the freak then, was Lamar Latham.
Mm-hmm. Was 57.
Freak. Yeah, he was a freak of nature. He was fast for a big human being. So it was a veteran team. with a lot of experience. That was the year coming. My rookie year came off of them losing, I don't want to say 30 points they were winning by, and they lost the game in the playoffs to the Bills.
32 points.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. So, you know, going into training camp, you know, the late, great, you know, Mr. Adams said that this is if we don't go to the Super Bowl, this team will be dismantled.
Yes.
So, I was a rookie, so I'm baffled, like, oh, I'm going to get cut? So I didn't know what was going on. I had no idea. You know, I'm in Indiana. I watched the Oilers, but I didn't know where they were and what happened the year before. I watched it in college. I was a senior, and I remember I turned the game, and I turned it to – I remember the Cowboys game, and I don't remember who the Cowboys were playing because it was a more competitive game. And then when I turned it back, it was fourth quarter, and I saw that they were losing.
So. You know, it's funny because – so I worked Sundays – and I got off work and came home, and that game was on, and I turned it off at 28-3 and took a nap.
Uh-huh.
And turned it back on, and it was, you know, 38-38, and it's like, what happened?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it was. So going into my rookie year, that was the follow, you know, I followed that up. So it was
because they
really
fired
intense.
Jim Eddy, and they hired Buddy Ryan to be the defensive coordinator.
Yes, that is the history there. So, you know, my first go-around with Buddy Ryan, I was nervous, scared, everything involved in that, because he was intimidating. And there was some adjustment there with some of the veteran players, you know, with his approach. So I was sitting in the back and just prayed that he would never say my number.
So he just called you 23.
Yeah, everybody, though. It wasn't just me. It was everybody. Yeah. And he put the pointer. He had the laser pointer, the red laser pointer. And I'm just like, oh, please do not point that thing at me.
And you started that year.
Yeah, I eventually got to that as a starter. And I think that kind of – I had a really good game there and on Christmas Day as a starter at safety. And played a lot up to that point, but then eventually I started and had a sack, caused fumble on Steve Young, and I kind of set the tone for my career. But, that was I wouldn't have ever imagined I would have been playing safety and – in that defense and having the success. But to everyone's credit involved, that whether it was the scouting department, the coaching staff, Buddy Ryan, and everything else, it fit every elite skill set that I had. Had to learn, you know, how to read defenses, I mean, the offensive linemen and how to fit. And then I was always strong, so I had, you know, I was squatting, you know, 400 some pounds in college. So I was, he taught me how to use my power. And even going against the guys that were bigger than me in 6'5", 300, and how to come with all these different moves. Coach Bettis was my DB coach, and he was an older gentleman and taught me a lot of different things, how to not take the brunt of blows when I had to be inside the box.
When did you become known as the Hitman?
Well, I started that my senior year in college.
Really?
Yes. And so I had a Letterman jacket with Hitman on there, and I kind
of
started.
Because of Bret the Hitman Hart?
No, it was not. But I was a big wrestling fan.
Okay.
All
right.
So no, I someone on the team, I can't remember. I think it was Henry Hall, my teammate, and he's an executive now, runs his own company. He's the one to start calling me Hitman, because I guess I was aggressive for a corner, and they had never seen anything like that. And it was really just a habit. That really created the Hitman, the chip on the shoulder,
yeah.
All those things of maturation of my journey to where I was then. And it kind of just evolved and snowballed. But I had the Letterman jacket. You know, they gave a Letterman jacket, and I put Hitman on the back. And my senior year, I had it on there. And it kind of started it. And I started, you know, really buying into it. So that's where it all started. Yeah.
So your whole thing, though, I mean, you think about undersized high school, not recruited, end up at St. Joseph's, mm-hmm. walk on at Ball State, have to sit a year.
Mm-hmm.
You play all these different positions.
Mm-hmm.
When it is said things happen for a reason, mm-hmm. that's 100% right, because there is seemingly no way that you have the career that you ended up having if you don't go through all those various experiences, the slights,
yeah, uh-huh.
which provided the motivation, but also the understanding of different positions.
Uh-huh.
Being coached by different people in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
Really quite an amazing journey that is not typical of the five-star safety who gets recruited, plays 3 years, and then is the eighth pick in the draft, and
right.
he's 6'3", 210, and runs 4'4", and completely different.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. I don't know if I even would have turned into that player if I hadn't gone through the, you know, not understanding that at the time.
Oh, sure.
For sure. But I thought my journey, I was well prepared for when I got the opportunity to. And I was just as surprised as everyone else. But as things kept going along, you know, even Rick Minner, once he left me my senior year and was at Notre Dame, and he's coaching, you know, Notre Dame, he said, hey, man, he calls me after the season and says, we have this kid's going first round. That's what they're saying, and so he is. And he said he's athletic, and it was Tom Carter.
Yeah, Tom Carter, 25. Tom Carter. I remember him well.
And went to the Bengals, right?
Yes.
And so he says, I think you're just as good as this kid.
You were better.
Yeah. And so, well, I'd end up being a safety, but he says, you know, he may be a little looser in his hips or maybe a tad faster. Or we, you know, we said, but I want you to come down and work out with him. So I came down and working that kind of start spewing the confidence level that I could compete, you know, because back then all games were just on TV. So
right.
we were just watching games on TV. So, you know, I'm looking up to, you know, whether it was guys in Notre Dame, Michigan, Ohio State, or Tennessee, or all the SEC schools. You're just watching the team and say, man, dang, I don't know if I could really compete on the same field with them. So that kind of built with me playing in the blue-gray. And that's, you know, that's where I meet Trent Green, who went to IU, which we played against. But then, you know, developing a relationship with these guys, and then I'm out there performing against these guys that went to Oklahoma in the blue gray or anybody, you know, and it just starts saying, oh man, I'm just as good. As I said, I was a realist about who I was. If somebody was better, if it was a time, like, I don't know, we about the same. And so that happened, and the Senior Bowl was just off the charts. I mean, that really, really put me in a mind frame, and that was when Alabama won the national title, and all their players were in this game. And practice every day, and we're doing two.
Because they were the 92 national champions, mm-hmm. and they had some serious DBs, George Teague.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's where I met George Teague. Uh-huh. And developed a relationship with him.
He could play.
Yeah, yeah. And he was he ended up being a first round pick by Green Bay, right? The last pick or second round or something.
Yeah.
And he was built up to be, but he ended up playing safety.
Approaching a railroad.
Just like he did. So he would only practice one of the practice. So I was doing extra duty, so because I was on the same side as him as far as DBs, and so I put in the work, and you're going against Quadrius Smith.
Oh yeah, and the missile.
The missile. So and all these different guys, and the missile had me running to the goalpost. I was running so fast I couldn't stop. It's probably the fastest I ever ran in my life. But those things all happened, and it built really confidence in what I could do. And then going to the combine, seeing how I matched up. There and you know, it may have been where they saw, well, this guy's a really good football player, but it's not quite as fast as he needs to, because I only ran like a 4.5. I never ran a 4.5. I always ran a 4.4 something. But at the combine, I ran something, you know, 4.54 or something, and I was perturbed. I was like, oh, that did it for me. I'm not gonna get drafted higher, you know, than I thought, because I was a middle round guy at that time. That's what they were saying. And
you went in a round that no longer exists.
But the pick does. 214.
214.
Same pick as Cortland. Yeah.
Do you keep up with who number 214 is every year in the draft now? Do you always look to see who it is?
Absolutely. I always look, and I just to see who's still around, whether it's 230, 214, because there's really good players that are getting drafted. Now it's really hard to get drafted on so many really good players. I kind of always watch and pay attention. That is my dream, I have one dream left. I've kind of lived a dream of dreams in my life. Being a broadcaster, that's what I wanted to be, meeting Brian Gumbel growing up, and he was a keynote speaker at this when I got this award for youth the year for the Boys and Girls Club.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so I met him and kind of started the pendulum, and that's why at Ball State I was part of the David Letterman building and all those things and communication. So I didn't know I was going to make pro. I wasn't that guy like that. I thought, I got a shot, but I didn't know I was going to make it. Like, there was a part of me like, hey, I'm going to give it all I got, and if I don't make it, I'm cool with that. Mm-hmm. I really was. And I had a job at State Farm coming out of college, State Farm in Richmond, Indiana.
So you You're going to be Jake. Wearing the khakis.
So it was a heck of a
Jake
ride.
From State Farm. You would have been Blaine from State Farm.
I don't know if I would have been Blaine, but it might have been State.
You would have been Blaine from State Farm.
I don't know, man. So it was what a heck of a.
It's been a ride.
And then you
get the whole thing happened. So you become a staple of the Houston Oilers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. And then you're a staple of the Tennessee Oilers. And then you're a staple of the Tennessee Titans. You're one of only 20 who can say that you were all three.
Is those 20 of us?
20 guys who can say, I was a Houston Oiler, I was a Tennessee Oiler, and I was a Tennessee Titan.
Dang.
Right. Okay. So who are the names I would
make? I mean.
You don't know all three.
Eddie.
Right now, I know Eddie.
Steve.
Mac,
Brad. Matt. Yeah. I mean,
Bruce, okay.
But then there's some guys, too.
That I wouldn't
that are kind of. Jason Lehman.
Oh, I would have never guessed that.
Jason Lehman was one who was, he was a Houston Oiler, he was a Tennessee Oiler, and then he was a Tennessee Titan. Kind of a different deal, for sure.
Yeah, you know, you talk about, even on draft day, it was another, disappointing day. And by the way.
Where were you?
I was in my apartment there with my two roommates, that's it. Remember, my one roommate who I went to high school with was the kicker and the punter, Damon Keller, and the other one was on the golf team, Jeff Cotner.
Okay.
And so eventually it became just me.
So it wasn't like big family gathering?
No. I never bought it. I was a really focused person. After the fifth round, I did not watch. I went to the library. I called it Kraken with the Bracken Library. It was a three-level library there on campus, and I went to the library because I had a test on Monday, and I said, I think I better pass this test since I haven't got drafted yet.
Because you may be going to work for State Farm.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. So I did have a flip phone in the Mr. Hollivack. The great Mr. Hollivack called me, and then Floyd Reese and those guys, and we're going to take you. And I said, yeah, you guys called earlier in the fifth, but I didn't say you were going to take me, but y'all acted as though y'all were, and then it didn't happen. I said, I'm at the library right now. They said, no, we're taking you. Just you got it. And I go, I'm up here studying for this test. And they're like, no. Well, when you get back home, just go look at the ticker. We're going to be on there. And so now I'm distracted. I can't study. So I get up, leave, and go home. My agent then is calling me. By the way, I'm driving back, and said, hey, they took you. And so then until I sit there, and I'm sitting on the couch by myself now, nobody's there, because I left, they left. And I saw my name, and I was excited.
Okay.
I was truly pumped.
How much was your bonus?
My sign-up bonus my rookie year was $20,000. That's why I laugh. $20,000, and my since I was a late-round pick like that, I only got a two-year deal, and I made $115,000 and then I think $125,000.
But, I mean, in 1993, that's good money, man. That is really good money.
So after taxes, I think it was like $10,000.
So what did you do with the bonus? Did you do any? Did you put it in the bank, or did you buy something? Or
no, I didn't do anything with the money. I kept the money. I didn't have a car until after my first year was up.
No kid.
Yeah. He says I didn't, but I did. Brad Hopkins, who was first round pick, we developed a relationship, and I was real cool with the Illinois guys because we had two guys from my high school who went there. They were already graduating. They got drafted too. Derek Brownlow the year before me, fifth round, I think, by the Cowboys linebacker. And Mo Gardner 2 years before that, who I played with as well, went to the Falcons in the third round.
Okay.
You've arrived.
And so it was a natural connection, and we were in a Midwest area. So I got to know B-Hop at the Senior Bowl. And so when we got drafted, he was the first round. I was the last round pick. And I just stayed with him. He stayed in a town home there right across the street from the practice facility. So, so I lived with him, and I paid him a stipend like, $500 or something.
That's funny.
Yeah, and then I didn't buy a car, so I would drive one of his cars. If I needed a car, I would have to ask him. But yeah, he had two or three cars, so I just.
He's a car guy.
Yeah, he's a car guy. And he was first round. I think he had signed a bonus of three for me. I don't know what it was, but so I did that entire first season because I was still worried about that. I didn't know if I was gonna make the team. That's where my mind still was at. No,
was 30 years ago,
and I still had that mindset. And it actually motivated me. I never took anything for granted.
Yeah.
I never did. I just like, I got to keep working, keep grinding, because there was a part of me like, I didn't know after this year even if I was going to be on the team. So even after my rookie year, I did an internship at Smith Barney down in downtown Houston, and they helped me facilitate that. They had a program there for the players, because I was concerned. I said, well, let me see if I can work at the corporate, and if I ever do get a nice contract, that I'd like to at least know what to do with it. And so I did that, and still concerned that, okay, I may not be on the team the next year. And I think some guys, being that I was a later round pick, it benefited me, where some guys maybe in the first round probably would have relaxed and took things for granted. And it never dawned on me. I was always trying to evolve and be the better version of what I was the year before.
Right.
And work on all my weaknesses and address them, where a lot of athletes, they don't kind of address, you know, if they're weak in, you know, whether, oh, I can't catch, you know, so I'm going to work on my hands or my footwork, my covering skills. So that's kind of where we were. So it was.
That is a great story.
That's my conversation with Blaine Bishop as part of our Follow Me Through Tennessee series, as we went to Swaney Swift's on the Square in Gallatin. And remind you that Dunkin' has it where it's always game on. That's right. Grab a cup of coffee and kick off the action, whether that's drinking a cup on your way to the game or grabbing one to go before watching the game at home. Dunkin' is always there to help you get your game on. Just like the pros, we need to be at our best come game time, which is why Dunkin' is the most important part of your game day ritual, because it's always the best call for football. America runs on Dunkin'. Thanks for joining us for this special edition of the OTP.